Yo, what's up, everyone? It's your boys, Jimmy, Daz, and Defa. All right, lads.
Hello, hi Defa.
Deefer. Deef.
Defer, fuck
Oh, man. What a absolutely wonderful chat we just had with maybe the most fascinating dude we've spoken to yet, I would
100%,
say.
actually. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
Aaron Weaver from Wolves in the Throne Room is joining us this evening for an absolutely incredible chat. We get into everything from the songwriting process of the band to the artwork and how that all comes to life and how songs blossom from a riff into it. It's just, I don't even want to say any
Yeah.
more about it. This is just an interview you've got to listen to.
It's mesmerizing. It's a mesmerizing chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
What an honor.
Yeah,
Oh my God.
a real honor, and I'm so excited now, Daz, for this show in
Oh,
London. I
mate.
literally cannot
Oh,
wait.
fucking hell.
Yeah,
Unreal.
but yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it. Aaron Weaver from Wolves in the Throne Room. Aaron, thank you for taking some time to chat to us, man. This is a real privilege. How you doing, dude?
So good. It's springtime here in Cascadia, and it's always like a revelation when spring comes. Maybe it's the same in England,
Oh, yeah.
the winters are so brutal and everything is so dead and so cold and so wet that when spring comes, it's like living in a different reality. Like the freshness of the air and the flowers that come up and the leaves on the trees, it's like living a different life.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I can imagine where you are based as well, I've listened to interviews that you've done in the past with your surrounding forest and things like that, and in the winter and it's all dead, and then all of a sudden you've got these vibrant colors and everything. It must be incredible.
It feels good not to be cold and wet all the time. Yeah,
As
that's what we are.
Englishmen,
Even in spring, we're still cold and wet.
as Englishmen, we know that feeling too well, man. So first place we want to dive into, obviously Crypt of Ancestral Knowledge came out back in September. What was the thinking behind releasing an EP at this point? Was it like a full stop on Primordial Arcana, or is this more of a gateway into the next phase of the band?
Really good question, and it's both. Yeah, we think a lot about like what we need to do as artists to completely seal up a record, because making a record is such an involved process, artistically, spiritually, psychologically. It's just tied up with everything in your life as an artist. Everything you're going through, all of the heartbreak and madness and joyful experiences are in the music. Like the music is processing all of that. And Primordial Arcana was such like a epic journey for us as a band, for a lot of reasons. I'd say the biggest thing on my end was that it was very much my initiation as the recording engineer, mixing engineer, and producer of the record. Because it was the first time we've not worked with an outside producer, someone to help us over these, technical challenges, but also the kind of artistic and spiritual things that come up during a really intense creative process. So it was the first time just the three of us doing it together, me, Nathan, and Cody. And it was a lot. It took a long time, and there was a lot of like making huge fucking mistakes on the artistic side, and then having to, or the engineering side or the technical side, then having to solve those problems, which that's kind of what art is, like fucking up. And then having to fix the problem, and it makes an unexpected and creative result. So the EP was, yeah, closing that up. And as you intimated, opening up to the next phase of what the band's going to do.
That's cool, man. So I think you've maybe kind of answered what I was wanting to ask you next, but do you write as musicians in a band? Do you write consistently? Are you always coming up with ideas and banking things, or do you like to wait for, right, this is what we're doing next, this is where we are personally, this is where we are spiritually, this is where we are, and have it all fresh and a whole new project as such?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like we'll set aside time to write. Like we're setting aside a month to write, and we'll all just either sit in our individual home studios or come together in the rehearsal space here at our main studio, Owl Lodge, and just work on just writing and get out of, because you know there's a lot of other stuff that's involved in being a band. Like we don't have managers, and so if we're going to go on tour, we figure that shit out. If we're going to put out a new t-shirt, we figure that shit out. And so when we're writing, we put all of that stuff aside and focus on the pure artistic side of it. And sometimes that means like, I'm just going to go for a hike. I'm going to go in the mountains. Like that's what I need for inspiration. Like that's what is going to feed like the riffs and the inspiration and the vision for the record.
Yeah, that's cool. And so I'm fascinated, okay, by how songs come to life. Me and Def, we've said this so many times. We're massive nerds for them studio documentaries where you see a band toing and
Creating.
froing with ideas and creating. But I think for a band like yourselves, it's a very different process. Now, obviously, your music's deeply spiritual, it's deeply personal, but songwriting is a process, right?
Yeah,
So
definitely.
how do you handle the process of writing a song without it diluting and stifling the emotion and feeling that you want to convey? You know, like, does this riff need to be here? Does it fit? Do we need a longer intro? Does it need to be 8 minutes? This song can be
Yeah.
all of that. Does it, how do you manage to do that without it diluting your what you want to channel out into the world?
Well, I guess that we all have developed a sort of internal sense of whether we're on the right path.
Right, okay.
It is very much like a felt sense. Like, does this feel right? And it's a matter of being really honest with oneself. Because you might be writing this song and convince yourself, like, yeah, this is really fucking good. This like really works. This is really getting at the deepest essence of what we're trying to convey. And it might not be. It might just be like, I just kind of want to be done and move on because the grind of writing music is so challenging. And you just can't take those shortcuts. Like anytime that we do go down that path and just sort of settle on something, it always ends up wasting a bunch of time and energy, and we have to reset and go back and get on the correct path. So, yeah, it's a matter of just like honing that intuition, like that sense of like, yeah, this is it. Like this feels right. And I suppose that the what that comes down to is moving out of the thinking mind, the mind that is like, is this good? Is this bad? Will the fans like this? Will the fans not like this? Is this song too? How are we going to play this live if I put the synth part on? Moving out of that mental space into the other sense organs that our bodies have, into our hearts, into our guts. And that's what good music is. Good music comes out of the heart and out of the guts. It doesn't come out of your brain. The mind is good for solving maybe some technical problems, which is a part of music because it's a craft, whether you're building a house or making a record, there's tools and there's crafts, and your hand plane has to be sharp. Your computer has to work. You need to handle your file management properly so you don't lose the fucking record. The important part is that it's coming from the heart, fucking deepest parts of your body.
Well, that definitely translates into your work as a band. Like, you know, you can feel that on everything that you've ever put out. I think it's
Cool.
astounding.
Thank you. And I was going to say one more thing that our bodies are, I believe, antennas or conduits, perhaps, for the creative energy, which I do think comes from outside of us to a certain degree. I'm very conscious of the fact that my inspiration that comes out in a guitar riff or a drum beat or vocals or whatever is coming up from the earth. It's like literally coming in through my feet, it hits the fucking root chakra or whatever, my balls, you know, my guts, comes through the heart, and then it comes out through the hands as music that people can listen to. And that's the magic of like being a human being in this incarnation, in this life, is that we can do that. We can tune in to these great mythical sources of energy, art, and inspiration, and use the alchemy of our body, our mind, body, and soul to make music and art. And what greater purpose could there be for a human life to create that and then share that with other human beings?
Yeah, it's fascinating, man. Like it, and that's, you've really like nailed what I was hoping to, that you would say. So thankfully my question made sense, if you know what I mean. So how has the songwriting process in Wolves in the Throne Room shifted over the years? Because obviously Cody joined in 2017.
Yeah.
So I think Colin, your live guitarist, he's now sort of officially joined the band before Primordial. So you now got different voices and differing opinions. And how has that shifted the way you write and create over the years?
Yeah, the process has definitely gone through different phases and different evolutions of how we like to work. Cody started playing guitar with us in 2011, 2010 maybe. And he was, and really kind of like joined the band as a full creative member right at the very end of Thrice Woven. It was kind of like a process of initiation for him to truly like join the cult, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I remember the moment. It's like magic, you know. It's like, yeah, I kind of get like chills thinking about it, like as you do with like moments of like true magic and like love life. We were driving back from mixing Thrice Woven. We were working at a studio in Seattle. We were driving back to Olympia. We just realized, oh shit, like Cody's in the band, like in the band. Like it was like a threshold that gets crossed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was when it was just me and Nathan, and now, oh shit, now there's three of us. That's why it's called Thrice Woven. Like the name came to us as we were driving back from that mixing session in Seattle.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, writing Thrice Woven, for instance, Cody hadn't crossed that threshold. It was me and Nathan just grinding it out together. Like every riff on that record, me and Nathan wrote. On Primordial Arcana, Cody's voice was like fully there. Like he fully wrote a third of the material and held a third of the creative space. And it sounds like you guys enjoy hearing how the sausage gets made.
Oh, it's absolutely.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep.
I love watching Pink Floyd in the studio, like watching, like, how are they doing that?
That's exactly it. Yep.
You know, I love it. Yep. In all genres of music.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, or really all kinds of art. Like, how did that movie get made? Like, how did he paint that painting?
Yes.
How did they put together this ballet performance?
Yeah.
Because it's all kind of, how'd they build that house? Like, how did that city come to be in a way that's beautiful and stirs the soul and doesn't feel like a shitty dystopian hell realm? Like, what worked in that creative process to make something that's beautiful instead of something that's hideous and destroys the soul?
Yeah, that's exactly. And as like non-musicians, I guess it's doubly mind-blowing to us how four dudes can pick up some instruments and a few months later there's this incredible work of art that you're going to be listening to and feeling emotions, and you might, you know, make you cry or make you elated for the rest of your life. It astounds me, and it sort of blows my mind how some dudes with instruments can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. How do we do it? It changes. So like Primordial Arcana, we were very much writing separately. Like we all sort of retreated to our home studios, you know, just, which can just be like a laptop and a guitar. It's all you need nowadays.
Yeah.
And just wrote riffs, riff after riff after riff. I can speak for my process is that it's very much improvisation, and it's very much a matter of like turning off the filter of, is this good or is this bad? And just like writing and writing and writing and writing and writing until it's just wrung out and there's like nothing else coming through, and then culling like really like listening through with like an ear for what has like an emotive quality, like an ear for what is touching my heart or what is speaking to something in my life. And then, you know, that's the cream that rises to the top.
Yeah.
And then we all do that in our own way. I think that we all have like a really different process. Like Nathan doesn't, I don't think he's do, he doesn't do it that way. Like he just is writing a riff and it's like, that's just a riff. There's nothing else to it. There's no like this isn't about this thing I'm going through or my you know my the deeper part of my life. It's just a
Yeah.
killer.
Yeah.
And like in some ways we balance that because I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, this is my you know like my fucking divorce. This is my like son being born. This is like the sun rising, you know, whether it's grandiose or not. I don't know, but that's just the way I work. And so, and I think Cody is like somewhat in between. He's very much like, tends to balance me and Nathan because we're brothers. We see things so differently and work from like opposite sides of the creative process. And so that's why it's really good. Like Cody is very much like the perfect like third person in that creative ecosystem. So it really does balance things and help all of us like bring our best parts to the table in the most effective way and doesn't let any one perspective like dominate the
Yeah, cool.
process. So once we get like, you know, the riffs, we call it the riff sack. Like we like literally have like, you know, like a nowadays, like an Ableton session with every riff, like hundreds of riffs, and then put songs together from there. And then bring it to the practice space and then learn how to play it live and make it a song that works as like a rock band. But at the same time, like that process has worked for a couple records. For the next record we're about to get started on, once we return from the home from this tour, we're gonna do it differently. We're gonna write the entire thing together in the practice space,
Oh, wicked.
which is how we did older records like Diadem, Two Hunters, and Black Cascade were pretty much just written in the practice space, like a loud, fucked up, nasty practice space. And so we're going to kind of not go back to that, but bring a bit more of that approach rather than this more like not clinical, but studied approach to songwriting, where we're like really putting the riffs together in like a very carefully constructed demo and then bringing it to the practice space.
Oh, that's awesome, man. So will with like, do you, you'll be writing something, and like you said, you might write a riff that's really touched. It gets you here, and does that then spark off like, oh, that album titles and song names and lyrics, and do you get like inspirations then? Oh, this could be the album cover because that's this music's taking me in this direction. Do all those things sort of spark off of the music?
Like for me, like the, and again, I can't speak for how Nathan and Cody work because we have different approaches. I'm not sure how Nathan writes lyrics. I'd have to watch him do it, but I know how I do it. It always comes last. Lyrics and song titles always come, it's lyrics, then song titles, and the album title has always come last.
Right,
Like
okay.
literally like the very last possible fucking second. The consternation of like the graphic design people and the layout people. But the way I do
You've got 5 days. Hurry up.
exactly deadline. The way I do lyrics is the song is done, like almost like mixed. Then I'll listen to it and images come into my mind. It's like playing like a movie almost. It's very visual. I write those down, and those are the lyrics.
Oh, wow. So it's just straight from the heart, personal, in the moment writing. Oh, okay, that's really cool, because that's sort of what I kind of wanted to touch on earlier, is like, if you're, you know, if you write consistently, you might write a set of lyrics and they're a year old, and you'll come back to them and go, oh, these don't mean anything to me anymore. And so you're getting the true Aaron Weaver in that moment, this is what he was going through, feeling, and there it is on a record.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it's been done for a while. But it might be different tomorrow. Like a fragment of lyrics might come to me and yeah, I'll write it down in a notebook and maybe that'll pop back into an album in the future. Because there are like certain pieces of creativity, whether it's a riff or like an idea for a drum beat, that do kind of stick around for a while. Like I think all of us have like notebooks where we keep track of our creative ideas.
Right, cool.
I'll review those sometimes and like build upon them. So not everything is 100% spontaneous. There's like a balance to be struck.
Yeah, of course.
You know, what's immediate right now and, you know, the groundwork that has been laid over the past couple years before going to the studio to make a specific record.
Yeah.
But I'd say for the most part, it's like what's happening right now. And like, you know, old riffs that have been laying around for a couple of years just don't feel fresh. It just feels like this is something we could like make work, but it doesn't have this spark of vitality and energy that is so important to have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you touched on the artwork, well, sort of how it comes to life. But I just wanted to touch on the artwork for the EP because it's absolutely stunning. Whose sort of concept was that, and are you heavily involved in the visual aspect of the artwork?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, we've always done increasingly more and more over time.
Oh, wow.
We've always worked either created the artwork ourselves or worked with a photographer or painter to create the artwork, guiding it every step of the way.
Oh, amazing.
I'll give Nathan most of the credit for the visual stuff because he's a photographer and like knows a lot about lenses and like all the technical lighting, like all the technical side for photography. And I think, especially in the early days, was the most committed to having a really strong visual aesthetic. And for us, the visual, the way that it looks, whether it's on a record or on stage, is as important as the music.
Yeah.
It's one thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a complete art. From top to bottom, the entire aesthetic experience is just one thing, including the music videos, which we make ourselves. And it is true that sometimes visual things do drive the music. I think that on Primordial Arcana, we definitely had like a folder of paintings and photographs, called a mood board or whatever, but it was like pieces of like what we want the music to look like.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because for me, I can speak for myself that one of those sort of breadcrumbs that guide me to the right path is like what the music looks like in my mind, especially when I'm doing the mixing stuff. Like I very much go off of what I'm perceiving the music as a space. Like I'll go inside of the music and like look around and like the guitar is over here and the bass is over here and the drums are down here. And then using the tools of mixing like EQ and compression, whatever, to make it look a certain way. Like, oh, I want the bass drum to look like an altar with six candles on it and there's a deer skull. And I want this guitar to be a sunbeam that's shining on that altar and it's activating this synthesizer over here.
Yeah.
And it's all connected to the lyrics, which are coming in from, you know, which is the air that we're breathing in this space. Yeah, I guess it's kind of a weird process now that I say that out loud, but that's
no. It's fascinating, man, because sometimes people think you're nuts when you're trying to describe music sometimes, and you're like, well, the vocals are set back.
Yeah.
Behind, it feels like they're coming from behind your head when you're listening. And we spoke to a band, obviously you're going on tour with, Garaya. We spoke to them before or just after the album came out, and they were using a lot of like black and gold and bronze and stuff for the visuals, and we were sort of talking to them as how the music sounds like that color.
Yeah.
And with Primordial Arcana, the music sounds like the colors that you presented on the cover, I thought I was sounding nuts when I was describing it like that, but you've just summed it up exactly how I thought how that works. So
That's interesting. I mean, it's gratifying to hear that that came through. Color, you hit on color. Color is so important.
Yes.
Like mixing especially, because and this is kind of like a technical thing, that it's so easy to get lost in the fucking weeds.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with like a really long piece of music that might have 100 tracks. You can just get down some fucked up rabbit holes about, wait, does this kick drum sound bad? Does this kick drum sound good? And for me, like the guidepost is color, like mixing it until it turns the right color in my mind. And then just like, that's good. Like, don't think about it. Don't try to push it in a different direction. It's the right color. And now we can move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I was listening to an interview you did with Dan Carter, where you were talking about, you know, your first time mastering and mixing an album. And like you said, the first time you did it, you had 99 goes at one song and things like that. But does that, the pain that you went through doing that, will that have really, that will surely like really help you now going forward? Because trying to describe like the drum sounding like an altar with candles and to a third party must be real tricky, but now you're in a spot where you can go, no, I know exactly what I fucking want this to sound like. And
that record Primordial Arcana was very much an initiation, like into a era which we're in now where we are what's the word, so much more independent, which also sort of dovetails or reflects just like becoming older in life and having just more agency to be able to have a concept and then manifest it in the world without having to ask permission from anyone or need to have anyone that's gatekeeping your artistic vision. And that feels really good. But yeah, you have to kind of crawl through like a pipe filled with like razor blades and flames to get there. And I mean, I'm sure we all can agree that's fucking life. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, it's these like challenging experiences and sometimes brutal experiences that force us to dig deep into ourselves and find the beauty and the strength that we would not have been able to access otherwise. And maybe it's just a matter of like shifting our perceptions. Like, yeah, I'm crawling through a spike or a spike filled tunnel full of like acid. And the only way I can do this is like shift my consciousness to say, you know what? These blades don't really feel that bad. This acid that's devouring all my flesh, it's kind of nice, actually. It's kind of like a warm bath. Which I think we all have to do sometimes when we're really fucking going through it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it must be more rewarding when you get that finalized product at the end, and you can maybe think to yourself, I did all I can here, and not, oh fuck, I wish we'd have chosen that guy, and this guy hasn't really nailed what we wanted. And you know, that's your music CV that you're living with for the rest of your life. Then that's your life's work there. And I guess doing it yourself like this, you can look back at it and go, hey, maybe I didn't quite nail what, but that is what I, that's my yeah. work right there. That's
definitely. Yeah. I can say that about all of our records, is that we went to the fucking edge and over the edge to make it as good as it can be and still get it out into the world. Yeah. Because that's, you know, that's the double-edged sword with it, especially when you don't have this outside voice, this producer telling you to cut it, is that you can get in this Guns N' Roses Chinese Democracy kind of situation where it's like re-recording the guitars for 20 years. Yeah. Comes out, it sounds like shit.
Yeah.
That's a really nice part about the alchemy that me and Nathan and Cody have, is that we all trust each other to say, this is good. Like, let's move forward with this, or like, that's not good enough. Let's keep working on this until it reaches this standard.
Yeah.
And we all trust each other to bring valuable and correct perspective to the table. Even though we might not agree with each other or might have like knockdown, drag out brawls over certain things, like fundamentally, we all trust each other to bring the correct perspective to make the record as good as it can be.
Yeah, that's it. You're all aiming for the same result, you know, and the best for the band that you can possibly get to. So, so dude, you're going out on an extensive sort of European tour very soon. How at this stage of your career, with you know the back catalog, the extensive back catalog that you have, how do you now choose a set list and decide what goes in and what gets cut and keep everybody in the band happy as to what songs you're going to be playing?
For this tour on Instagram, I posted the album cover for all of our records and asked the fans, what song do you want to hear off this record?
Oh, wicked.
And that's like not how we're making the set list, but that information was really valuable. Like, oh, shit, we'll really want to hear stuff from Black Cascade, which we've not played in like since that record came out. For whatever reason, we've really neglected that record live. So for the first time in a long time, we're bringing back music from Black Cascade, which is a record that I think that me and Nathan have kind of given short shrift for some reason. But I went back to it and listened to it and I was like, oh, this is really fucking good. It's like very weird, because it was a very weird recording process and a very weird time in our band. But I can see why people want to hear the music from that record. But yeah, to your point, it is a challenge because we have, what, 7 records. And we want to play a set that feels really good to us, but we also really fucking care about the fans.
Yeah.
Like a lot, and want to make sure that the set is like the best possible experience for them. So I will say for this tour, we're going to play, there's been some certain live set stalwarts that have been there for years, and we're not going to play those. We're going to play some definitely material off every record, but we're not going to play Rocks and Roots in London, for instance, because we've played Rocks and Roots in London like probably 5 times in the past number of years. So we're kind of in like it's a bit of an uncomfortable situation for us, actually. Like it feels a little edgy to like put together a completely new set that reflects the band's entire career and has like fan favorites, but is also something that's really fresh. It's fun. It's like good to like dig into these songs we've not played in a really long time and like, you know, find the essence in them.
Yeah.
Like me as a drummer, like finding the groove, like, whoa, that drum beat's really weird. Like the feet drums is like very strange. And I have to like almost like time travel back to that studio session and connect to like what I was thinking about as a drummer then, and then like bring that forward so I can have that same essence for this upcoming round of performances.
It's quite exciting as well, because you know, you've got new people who didn't play on those records now playing those songs live, and they will interpret those songs in different ways, and they'll channel different energy into those songs. And so these songs that, you know, you've been in your life for years are now fresh to you, perhaps.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the one thing that, to your point about a freshness, is that for the last couple tours, our dear companion Galen Bodwin has been playing bass. That is something that has like made the live band sound so much better than it used to my ears, because he's such like a fucking killer musician overall, but a really fucking killer bass player.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really inspiring to me as a drummer, to have like a really good bass player to play with, which I've not really had in the past. And I'm really, he's going to arrive in Olympia in a couple of days, and we're going to start rehearsals with him. And I'm really excited to hear the bass lines that he's worked out for like songs off Black Cascade, for instance, which had bass guitar on it, but it was just like in a very like minimal and like utilitarian role.
Yeah.
But we've asked him to kind of like let his freak flag fly a little bit. That's like creativity to the bass lines. It's going to make it sound really good. So I'm super stoked about that.
Yeah, I think his playing's added a real, the what I'd describe it as warmth He's added a lot of warmth to the sound. I think Thrice Woven and Primordial, warm is the how I those albums sound to me. They're really black metal can be quite bleak and harsh, and but these two albums feel really quite like organic and very natural sounding to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and that's that for me at least, that's a very conscious thing, is to manifest and channel that life energy. Because indeed, like most black metal is very much about death and very cold, icy spaces. Pure yin energy, darkness, sometimes the destructive side of chaos. And that's just not our approach. I don't in it's I love black metal, and I love like the coldest, like Norwegian stuff that is expressing that very, very dark side of reality. I suppose I see it like, you know, in India, for instance, you see like Aghori sadhus, like these extreme ascetics who like live in the charnel grounds and human flesh and are just holding space for darkness, for decay, for the vulture picking the flesh off of a corpse. And you see this all through metal, in death metal and black metal specifically. And I see that as like as really important artistic work to do. To hold space for that in 3D reality. And I think also it contains it in a safe space. It's like, yeah, de death and decay is, it's part of reality. It's crucial. And it should be kept here in the charnel grounds. Because if those forces escape into the places where they should not be, then things go out of balance. And but for whatever reason, Wolves in the Throne Room, we're not doing that. We're not in the charnel grounds eating a dude's foot, you know? We're in the forest where things are alive. Some people don't like that. Some people don't like our band because of that, and so be it.
That dude, that's the side of black metal I enjoy more. I think something that's cool, just going back to the live show, that I feel you the fan base, the Wolves in the Throne Room, are they'll come to the show and they'll be there for the feeling in the air and the magic on the stage and how that's translating. I don't think their fans will turn up and go, oh God, they didn't play the hits. Oh, they didn't. Do you know what I mean? I think it's
We're gonna play the hits, don't worry.
a you go and see Megadeth and they don't play Holy Wars, you come away going, oh fucks. Well, they've really let me down here. But I think it'll whatever show you put on, it'll resonate with us in the crowd. So you're taking out a band we mentioned earlier, Gorea and Mortiferum as well. Two bands that we rate like really, really highly. Do you keep your ear to the extreme metal underground to keep in touch with what's going on? And
Definitely.
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love coming across a band that it like excites me. Because, you know, we could be all fucking poopy pants about the state of like pop music and like, you know, there's just a lot of fucking shit in like mainstream culture. And to come across like fucking true art in the underground that's like bubbling up. It just like it gives me like such a joy and like hope for the future, you know? It's
Oh
like
God,
so
yeah.
cool. So yeah, I'm always listening for stuff that inspires me and catches my ear. And it inspires me as an artist. Like it, you know, to be in community and communication with like other people who are on the same wavelength, it's just so crucial. Like
Oh, absolutely.
to have that community, you know? Yeah, we had such a fun time with on the most recent North American tour with Gurria and Blackbraid. It was just really good to connect with those two bands who are, like a generation younger and come at things from this more millennial perspective. Super cool. And we learned a lot. Like I'm always like watching how other bands do stuff on stage, like especially on a technical level. Like, how are they doing their fucking monitors? Like, how's this millennial sound guy approaching things in a way that, the 50-year-old guy isn't?
Yes.
What can we pull from like anywhere to make our show better, and stay and allow a situation where we can be even more true to the art that we want to manifest and share with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that those are Gorea especially are they're like a live band that you cannot take your eyes off for a second because you'll miss something, and it's so engaging, and that's what you get with your band as well, I feel. So it you know you there are there, you're selecting artists to go on tour with you who will
Stop time.
and
Just
enhance the
stop time.
whole night for the fan.
So manipulation of time is very much on my
Man.
mind as an artist, like slowing it down, speeding it up, stepping out of it entirely. I very much experience that as like the player. And I oftentimes get that feedback from fans that they experience that as well, that like time behaves in unusual ways during our performance, but also that's just in music in general. Like it's magic. It's creating a different space where we can be together for that time and have that shared experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll final question then, Aaron, for you. More of a fun one. When you're out on tour and you're traveling through cities and you're trying to kill time, how do you while away the traveling hours away? Do you read a lot? Are you a films man, or do you get lost in music and podcasts and
The best part about being at the level we are now in our career is that we always travel on a bus, like a there's a full-size Nightliner, one of like the smaller ones, because I hate traveling during the day. Like there's nothing I love more than like playing the show. The bus calls at 3 or 4 a.m. You can go to the bar with friends, have a few drinks. You can go right to bed if you want to, and just sleep while the bus is driving. Like that's like a shit to be like sound fucking asleep while we're traveling the 10 hours to the next city, and then I wake up in a new place entirely. It's like time travel, we call it. Like teleportation. It's like you play an amazing show, have some drinks with friends, see friends you haven't seen for a long time, go to sleep, wake up in a new city. It's like it's fucking amazing. I love it so much. And then we have sometimes like time during the day. I love to go to museums. I love seeing paintings. I love seeing, whatever the magical places are in any particular place, like getting to experience that. That's like one of the great pleasures of touring, and it really does inspire us artistically. That's something I'm really looking forward to on this tour, because we're going to Scotland and Ireland, which are places I really, really love and haven't been to for a long time. And
Beautiful
so
places.
we make it a point to like visit like the glorious places, like go to Newgrange and or go to the beach and go for a swim. It's like whatever the most like inspiring and magical place is in any particular region, we'll go there and like gather that inspiration.
That's brilliant, man. And I guess you put in all them years of hard work now, grinding away in vans to be able to go out and enjoy that side of touring now. So that's brilliant. Aaron, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. Like, thank you so much for giving up some of your time today to chat to us, man. It's been brilliant.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure, and hopefully I'll see all of y'all in London,
Yeah, we'll catch up with you, man. I've already dug out my CDs and a Sharpie because I'm gonna need
eh?
some signatures. So
I love it. Like I'm always happy to put the runes on things.
oh, brilliant.
Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah. Thank you very much again, dude. Been an absolute pleasure. And thank you guys for listening to Bangers and Mosh, the podcast for heavy music. Until next time, peace out.
Party on, dudes!